you, Sister Alia. Assalamu alaikum. Oh, I'm not going home tonight, Philadelphia, with that $250,000. We're going to have to send Brother Michael Rashid to the school of Imam Siraj Wahaj, because if Imam Siraj was up here, we would have been at $250,000 at 6 o'clock. So you guys are not leaving. I already told the general manager doors are locked. Yeah, I see him. He's locking the doors back there. Thank you so much, Care Philadelphia, to the board members, volunteers, to the staff, to the city of brotherly love for showing me love today, for showing Brooklyn love. I'm very happy and honored to be here. Many folks know me very well, and one thing that I am proud to say about myself is that I am an unconditional Care supporter. If there ever had to be the Care Defense League of America, I'd be the president of it. And I will always support the work of Care because I believe fundamentally that they are not only protecting the rights of Muslim Americans, but they are protecting the rights of all people living in these United States of America. And I'm so inspired by Jacob. And for folks who don't know, I know Jacob way before y'all known Jacob in Philadelphia, because Jacob was hanging out with me in New York City. And his commitment and his passion and his unapologetic love for the Muslim community, it really is remarkable. And I want you to know how lucky you are to have Jacob here in Philadelphia. And I'm grateful for Brother Michael Rashid, who was up here, who had invited me once to come to a rally for the Coalition for Philadelphia School Holidays or Muslim School Holidays, and inspired by his organization and how he brings people together. And you should be very grateful for him here in Philadelphia, as well as Sister Alia and Sister Salima. You guys got true superstars living here in Philadelphia, and so proud to call myself a member of the larger Muslim American community here in the United States. So I've been busy since Election Day. And just a little bit busy. Not too busy, just a little bit. And I'm very proud and honored as a daughter of your community to be one of the national co-chairs for the Women's March on Washington. But just to be clear, it's not just the largest women's march, it's the largest single day protest in US history ever. And it just happened to be led by women. And one of the national co-chairs happened to be a Muslim American Palestinian woman from Brooklyn, New York. It just happened there. Now, why is that important? Because right after the Women's March happened on Monday, I wasn't the only one that organized the Women's March. There are plenty of fabulous women from across this country who made this the single largest protest in US history. But the right wing chose me in a coordinated attack that included alternative facts and fake news and piecemealing of a narrative together. And they just couldn't fathom that there could be a Muslim woman in a hijab who's also Palestinian and is born in Brooklyn, New York, a Muslim woman who is strong, independent, outspoken, unapologetic, a Muslim woman who was resonating with masses of Americans way, way beyond her own community. They couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle someone who defied every stereotype, every propaganda that they have been propagating against Muslims and Islam in America. It drove them crazy. But what they didn't know, as they continued to target me in a very vicious, vitriolic way that led to threats against my life, that they messed with the wrong sister. Wrong sister. Sisters and brothers, when you work hard, when you work in a way that no matter what someone says or lies about you, people won't believe it. When you work in a way where you build meaningful relationships, when you show up and fight for other people, for other communities, When you stand against injustice, regardless of who that injustice is against, guess what happens? The people come out for you. The people will stand with you. So the right wing is sitting back like, wow, this may be our moment, sisters and brothers. People are finally waking up to our community and to the work that we have done together to make this nation a great nation. And I always tell people, people say, mashallah, Sister Linda, you got a big platform. You must have an army of people and a team behind you. It's me. The reason why I got a platform is because I have the best publicists in this country, and they're called Trolls Incorporated. So don't be mad at them. They're just helping my profile grow more and more, and they're doing it pro bono. So if you allow me, my Philadelphia sisters and brothers, to just be Brooklyn today. And be Brooklyn means I just want to tell it like it is, and I want to be able to not use a filter. And I may not be the most inspirational tonight of all the people that you heard, but I want to help us be rooted in a reality why you're sitting in this space today, why we're here supporting CARE. People were saying, oh man, we got to work together because we got to prevent fascism. We got to make sure that fascism doesn't come to reign here in these United States of America. So I went to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And I know many of you may have visited Holocaust museums across this country. And for those of you who have not, I want you to understand that before you visit a place that remembers one of the most horrific moments in human history, that you emotionally prepare yourself. As I was in the Holocaust Museum, I saw a sign on the wall. And the sign said, early warning signs of fascism. And I stood and I read the sign. And the sign said, powerful and continuing nationalism. Identification of enemies as a unifying cause. Supremacy of the military. Rampant sexism. Controlled mass media. Obsession with national security. Religion and government intertwined. Corporate power protected. Labor power suppressed. Rampant cronyism and corruption. Fraudulent elections. That was the sign. It said early warning signs of fascism. And sisters and brothers, I froze. Welcome to fascism in America. Fascism is already here. Fascism is already in the White House. Today, number 45, Agent Orange, demanded that 46 U.S. attorneys resign. Now listen, that's not abnormal that U.S. attorneys under a previous administration change under a new administration. So that's not really kind of different. What happens usually is that they get replaced one at a time as they get new people. Some U.S. attorneys have served maybe a year or a year and a half under a new administration until they find a new U.S. attorney. But to ask for 46 U.S. attorneys to resign, and the ones that didn't want to resign got fired, tells you all you need to know about the corruption of this administration. That happened today. I don't even have to list the things that have happened, sisters and brothers, just in the last 7 weeks under this new administration. A lot of people say about me, the critics say, you're anti-American. You're not a patriot. You don't love your country. You criticize your country. Sisters and brothers, I want to remind you in this room once again that dissent is the highest form of patriotism. I criticize my country because I believe that my country could do better. I believe that my country must respect all people that live and reside in these United States of America. And I will continue to love and criticize my country till that happens. I'm also a person that is rooted in the history of the country that I live in. I'm not a blind patriot. I don't just wave the American flag without understanding what that American flag represents for a lot of communities. Sisters and brothers, you have to understand and operate from the place that we live in, a country that, yes, welcomed many of our immigrant families, including my Palestinian immigrant family, who came here from living under military occupation in Palestine. And yes, I'm grateful that I get to stand here on this stage because my father chose to come here so that his children had better opportunities. Many of you in this room are here today because your parents fled persecution, violence, poverty, so you could have a better life. But we also have to recognize that we live in a country that was founded on the extermination of indigenous people. That's just the facts. It was also founded on the free labor of enslaved Africans who were forced to come to this country. They were not immigrants, Dr. Ben Carson. They were enslaved people, forced from their lands, separated from their families, stripped of their traditions, of their religions, of their languages. That's just fact of the matter. We also live in a country that excluded the Chinese from coming here for a period of time. So when people during the elections or candidates were saying we're going to do a complete shutdown of Muslim immigration, and everyone was telling me, Sister Linda, that's unconstitutional. You don't have to worry about that. They're just saying that for votes. Those people didn't know their history, that the same way that the Chinese were banned, Muslims could be banned. And you know what? They already started. You also live in a country where segregation of the races was the law of the land. You live in a country that interned Japanese Americans. Just a few days ago, people were remembering the signing of Executive Order 9066 that started the internment of Japanese Americans. Sisters and brothers, 75 years ago wasn't that long ago. That wasn't in another century. That was a generation ago. And I say that because we have to be rooted in a history. We sent back Jewish refugees. We told them we didn't want them here. We, as the American people, were complicit in what happened to Jewish people in Europe. And we got to own that. Just like we are complicit in the atrocities that are happening against our Syrian sisters and brothers. That is a stain on our record, on our humanity as Americans, Muslims included. When I think about these horrific moments in our history, and I think about in particular Japanese internment camps, and I tell my Muslim sisters and brothers all the time, what makes you think that you are more honorable than a Japanese American? What makes you think that you are immune to an internment camp? What do you have that Japanese Americans didn't have? They had families they loved. They had children they loved. They had careers. They had aspirations. They had everything that you have. What makes you think that somehow you're going to be protected from some atrocity that could come to our community? And it reminded me of a story of a young Muslim boy who stood up after a public lecture that I gave in a university in the Midwest. And it was a packed room just like this one. And this young Muslim boy from the MSA stood up and he said, Sister Linda, I have a question. He said, who were those Americans who lived here at the time of Japanese internment camps? I want to know who those people were that allowed for their Japanese neighbors and their children to be hauled off into camps. Who were those people? And he sat down. I was blown away by the passion and fear and anxiety in his voice. And a few days later, I sat in my office and I heard his voice and I said to myself, I know exactly who those people were. They were the silent majority. The silent majority that allowed for little four-year-old children and their parents and grandparents to be hauled off in camps. That this may be news to you, but those very camps that interned our Japanese sisters and brothers, guess what? They still exist. They could be open for business anytime. I want you to reflect on that, my dear sisters and brothers. You may be sitting here and thinking to yourself, wow, Sister Linda, like, that's heavy. That's a lot for us to hold. How do we find hope and resilience in all those moments that you have shared with us in our history? And I'm going to tell you where I find my hope and resilience as a Muslim American. You oftentimes hear me say in every space that I am in that I am unapologetically Muslim. I will never apologize to anybody for who I am and for the faith that I follow. Where does that come from? It comes from 460 years ago, when enslaved Africans were forced to come to this country. About 25 to 30% of those enslaved Africans were Muslims. Imagine that. Our ancestors, some who our religion was stripped from their families. They saw things, sisters and brothers, that you will never, ever imagine experiencing. And I think to myself, how is it that some of our enslaved Muslim sisters and brothers, how did they figure out how to stay connected to our deen? How did they still believe there was a God after all that they went through? Sisters and brothers, we have Muslim sisters and brothers who figured out how to be Muslim under the watch of a slave master. So when I say to people that I am unapologetically Muslim, it's not because I just want to be unapologetically Muslim. It is because we have no choice but to honor the legacy of those who sacrificed more than you will ever sacrifice so you could sit in this room today and call yourself a Muslim. And then generations after and decades after, our immigrant families came here from every part of this world and continued that legacy of building the infrastructure, of continuing to allow Islam to thrive so that you can be Muslim, so that your children could be proud Muslims in this country. Something that bothers me often when I sit in these spaces is I hear people say, we gotta find a new story. We need to find a collective Muslim story to tell. No, you don't need to find a new story. You don't need a new narrative, my dear sisters and brothers. Your Black Muslim sisters and brothers have already etched your name in history. You just gotta learn how to tell that story. Every day, I am proud to call myself a Muslim, knowing what those before me have sacrificed. And I'm proud to have heroes, American heroes, who are not just our heroes as Muslims. When people invoke the name of Muhammad Ali or the name of Malcolm X, they were American heroes. They were worldwide heroes. And yes, they were Muslim. The convictions that they had as Muslims, the choices that they made because they were Muslim, they are the leaders, not just of our community, but leaders of the world. And I hope that you emulate people like Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X, because let me tell you what their secret was. And this is, so I'm gonna tell you the secret, because the Muslims need the secret, in particular for my immigrant sisters and brothers. The secret is Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X worked to be respected and not to be accepted. We do not need people to love us We need people to respect us and our right to be Muslim in these United States of America. I love when people tell me, go back to your country. Go back to Saudi Arabia. I'm like, first of all, I ain't even from Saudi Arabia. Let's just get that straight. And the people that tell us, you know, Islam is a foreign religion, it doesn't belong here. It belongs somewhere on the other side of the world. And I love being bold and saying, let me tell you something. You need to go back to your country because my religion has been here before this land was called the United States of America. That's what you gotta teach your children. Our children have to be able to respond and understand that their roots are so deep in this nation that we belong here. And not only do we belong here, but this nation was built on the back of enslaved people, some of whom were your sisters and brothers in Islam. That's our story. And we gotta be bold and we gotta own that story and make sure that we are carrying on that legacy of resilience and pride that has been etched in this American story. Sisters and brothers, I am tired of the conversations about Muslims without Muslims. I don't know about you, but I like being at that table because they say when you're not at the table, you're on the menu. I don't like being on the menu. I like to set the menu. You're gonna eat what I'm serving for dinner. When I joined to be the national co-chair of the Women's March on Washington, there were some conditions to my participation. I was not about to allow anybody to put my hijabi face up on a poster and say we got Muslims. If I wasn't gonna be a boss, if I didn't have decision-making power, if I was not gonna have an important role, if I was not gonna be able to bring in other voices to that table from the Muslim community, I didn't wanna be anywhere near that Women's March. But I was embraced as a leader, as a social justice activist. And when that day came on January 21st, and you saw those faces at the Women's March on Washington, I made sure that my Muslim sisters were repped to the fullest. Malcolm X's daughter, Muhammad Ali's daughter, Sister Aisha Prime, Sister Zahra Bilu, Hina Naveed, an undocumented South Asian Muslim girl from Staten Island, New York, up-and-coming black Muslim hip-hop artist Alia Sharif. I made sure that people saw themselves on that stage, that young Muslim sisters saw women in hijab standing in their power on that stage at the Women's March on Washington. That's leadership, sisters and brothers. How do you use your platform to uplift the voices of others in our community? How do you take a space and put forth the best that our community has to offer? And we at the Women's March on Washington put the best we have to offer of the Muslim community on a national stage. This is for the Muslims that talk about, I don't want to be political. Sister Linda, I don't do politics. This is for you. If you woke up this morning and you are breathing and you're Muslim, you're political. You got no choice but to be political. Sisters and brothers, there is no choice for any of us to sit on the sidelines. There are two sides here. There's the side of the people and justice, and there is the side of the oppressors. There's no place called the sidelines. You gotta ask yourself, what side are you on? And depending on what side you choose, it could be a matter of survival or death for the rest of us. So start making that choice and understanding that just the virtue of who you are as a Muslim is political in these United States of America. Now let's get to care for a second. All throughout history, there always have been communities and they've always had their institutions that have defended their civil liberties, their civil rights, and their human rights. And there was a time in this country where the very people that the right wing memorializes, like Dr. Martin Luther King, when he rolls in his grave as Republicans invoke his name, was called a communist. He was a radical. He was part of organizations that were blacklisted by the US government. He was arrested. He was a victim of police brutality. He wrote you letters from jail. So anybody who wants to say, oh, I don't know about care right now, you, my dear sisters and brothers, and your friends who are not here are on the wrong side of history. I want to be on the side 50 years from now when CARE is the most mainstream civil rights organization in this country to say that I had CARE's back. And I hope that you are going to be on the side that says, oh yeah, CARE, this amazing organization, the most influential civil rights organization in this country, I didn't turn my back on them 40 years ago. I had their back because they had mine. Sister Alia said something very important. And I'm going to remix it a little bit. Regardless of what they teach you about these United States of America, one thing I learned from many people, and I think the first time I heard this was from the Reverend Jesse Jackson, actually. He said, freedom is not free. Don't let anybody tell you that freedom is free. Freedom is not free. You either pay now or you pay later. And if you pay later, it may be with your life. It may be because of something bad happens to somebody in your family. It may be your child gets bullied. It may be your family member who gets banned from coming into the country. So I want you to think about giving to CARE, not because you're giving a donation or charity to CARE. You are investing in the infrastructure and defense of the Muslim community. We need protection, and CARE is always at the forefront of protecting the civil rights of Muslim Americans. The first lawsuit against Donald Trump was launched by CARE, and I am very proud to be the lead plaintiff in that lawsuit, Sarsour versus Trump. I want people to know that we're almost at our goal, but not quite there yet. We are now at almost $175,000. I'm talking to the Muslims, because this is important for us right now. It's an important moment. And I want to remind us as Muslims that we believe in a big God. Our God is big. So oftentimes we get caught up in the issues that impact us directly. Oftentimes we say things like Muslim issues. I don't even know what a Muslim issue is. There's no such thing as a Muslim issue. But what I want you to know is that we follow a big God. We have the intellect and we have the hearts that can say all of this. We can say Black Lives Matter. We can say justice for immigrants and immigration reform and stop deportations. You can say yes to reproductive rights and supporting the Affordable Care Act. You can talk about climate justice and racial justice and economic justice. We could do all of that, sisters and brothers. We don't need to cut ourselves up and only focus on some issues. We are intersectional human beings. Our religion is an intersectional religion. Our religion is foundation is injustice. So when you are being an activist, when you are using your voice and raising your voice, you're not doing anything extraordinary. You are just being a good Muslim. That's how I want you to think about activism in 2017. I just want to say something really quick about our opposition. Our opposition is not more than we are. They don't have more money than we have. They're not more educated than we are. But we're out-organized by the opposition. We're not outnumbered by them. We are out-organized by them. I want you to answer this question because I'm really having a hard time. How is it that people who are united around vitriol and hatred and divisiveness, how are they more organized and powerful than people who are united around compassion, love, and justice for all people? I don't understand that. So what I'm asking you here today is to support CARE because we got to get into the business of out-organizing our opposition. And I know we have it in us, sisters and brothers. I want to give you a few quick things to do because I feel like when people come to these things, they want some guidance. First of all, Muslim community. Our opposition, when they attack a Muslim sister on the streets wearing hijab, they do not tap her on the shoulder and ask her, are you Sunni or are you Shia? They don't ask her, excuse me, are you from Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, or from Pakistan? They don't care if she's a black Muslim. When they vandalize our mosques or set our mosques on fire, you think somebody goes online and said, I want to check out what madhab that imam follows at that mosque. They don't care. When the government engages in policies that target Muslim communities, they don't care what kind of Muslim you are. So if our opposition is treating us like we are one community, why are we not acting like we are one community? Sisters and brothers, old baggage, old politics, we don't got time for that right now. Our unity is going to be what protects our communities. I also ask you, do you do the basics? Do you even know who your neighbors on your street are? Do you know who lives down the hall from you in your apartment building? Do you know who works six cubicles down from you in the company that you work at? We always say we gotta love and protect one another. How do you love and protect someone you don't know? So if there was a moment that someone came to pick up your Mexican neighbors or ICE showed up at their doors, if you didn't know that neighbor, I guarantee you will close that blind and act like nothing happened, which is exactly what happened to our Japanese sisters and brothers. I want you to know your neighbors. You can never, ever put your safety and security into the hands of the very state that targets you. You put your safety and security in the communities that you build around you. Not everybody in this room is a full-time activist, and I understand, and I am privileged. And I will use that word privileged very strongly in this room. I am privileged to be a full-time activist. But not everybody is as privileged as I am. I ask you, for those who cannot commit to this full-time, to support those who commit to this full-time. That means donating your money, donating your time, calling up the organizers, calling up Jacob and Sally and Usama and others and say, brothers and sisters, what can I do for you as you do for us? It doesn't take a lot for you to check in on your Muslim sisters and brothers who are risking their life and their time to protect your civil and human rights. I also ask you, my sisters and brothers, to show up. When you hear that there is a rally to support the Affordable Care Act, or you hear that a black young man was just killed at the hands of the Philadelphia Police Department, you better show up. Show up for that mother and that community that has lost their loved one. When you hear that there's an Ecuadorian mother who's about to be deported and separated from her family, show up. That is your duty as a Muslim, to show up in places where there is injustice that is happening. But it's also about what kind of solidarity are you looking for as a Muslim. If you don't show up for others, do not ask why people don't show up for our communities. And this one is really important to me, and for my Muslim sisters and brothers, and for those who are raising black Muslim children. I ask you to love your children in a way that you never loved them before. And you'll say to me, Sister Linda, but of course I love my children. I love my children every day, every breathing moment that I have. But I want you to visibly love them. I want you to touch them and hold them. You know why? Because it's a tough world out there. The love that you show them may be the only love that they see and feel all day as they go out into a world that tells them, you don't belong here. You're not worthy. You're not valuable. You will never amount to anything. Your religion doesn't belong here. You got to choose who you want to be. You can't be Muslim and American. That's what our children are being told in this world. So I want you every morning when your kids walk out to school to tell them that you love them, that they are worthy, that you are proud of them. And when they walk home and come home, I want you to tell your children, I love you, and hug them and hold them. Oftentimes, we are so distracted by this ugly world that we are in, by our errands, by cleaning and cooking and ironing and work, that we forget to love those that are closest to us. That is our responsibility, to show our children the love that we hope others show them in the world beyond our homes. And for my sisters and brothers of other faiths and no faith, I will commit to you that I will always be on these streets and my voice will always be loud for all people from all communities. And recently, when we heard Tariq al-Masidi and I, who is now a native of, or he's not a native, but he's living in Philadelphia right now. I'm not trying to give him yet because he just got here. But Tariq and I started a fundraiser to raise money for desecrated Jewish cemeteries. And you know what bothered me about that? Other than obviously the outrageous, who the hell goes and desecrates a cemetery where people are trying to rest in peace? If that's not the most outrageous thing that anybody could do, I don't know what is. But that's not what bothered me. What bothered me was what happened after that, the headlines. Why was it so surprising that Muslims who follow a religion of love and compassion and justice, why is that so abnormal that Muslims would raise money for their Jewish sisters and brothers? That bothered me. And I work towards a day that when Muslims are raising money for their Jewish sisters and brothers, that nobody flinches, because that's just how it is. That's the kind of country that I want to live in. And it's not the first time that our Muslim community has stood up. I was very proud to be part of an effort last year when 6 black churches in the South were victims of arson. We stood up. And in just a few days, we raised over $108,000 that we shared across those 6 churches. Because you know what? I love any place that invokes the name of my God. Any place where someone is loving God, I want that space to be protected. Sisters and brothers, we are in a state of emergency. This is not the Obama administration and it's not the Bush administration. This is the all hands on deck or something horrible is going to happen on your watch. I will tell you this, 60 years from now, if there were something horrible to happen right now, I want you to ask yourself a question. What kind of story do you want people to tell about you? I will tell you this. I will not allow any Muslim boy, any black boy, any Mexican indigenous boy 60 years from now to ask where Linda Sarsour was when horrible things were happening on the watch of the American people. It is going to be really clear where I was. The question is it going to be clear where you were? I'm always, sisters and brothers, worried about a time that will come where there will be Muslims hiding in a basement, having a conversation in whispers, asking, why are they so afraid to be Muslim in this country? Why are our women not wearing hijab? Why are our Islamic schools empty? Why are the mosques, these beautiful mosques that they have built, empty? Where were those Muslims 70 years ago, 100 years ago? Why didn't those Muslims stand up for our right to be Muslim? Why were those Muslims cowards? Why didn't they fight for our right? That's not the story or the conversations I want people to have about us. I want people to say that those Muslims who lived in 2017, organizations like CARE, they stood up. They fought for our right to be Muslim. They did not allow horrible things to happen to Muslims or anybody else. Sisters and brothers, I want there to be generations of unapologetic Muslims, and I want people to say it is because of people like you in this room that allowed them to be unapologetically Muslim. Assalamu alaikum.